dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war we're in, the war for the free world. One of the men who is clearest about the nature of that war and has done as much as anybody, really, to help us understand it, particularly those here in Washington who seem determined not to understand it, is our first guest, Dr. Michael Rubin, a research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a man who has served in government in the past, notably as one of its duty experts on Iraq and Iran, but is also the author of a very important new book. In fact, it's not quite out yet. We'll be talking with him about it at length when it comes out, Dancing with the Devil, and I can't wait. Michael Rubin, we catch up with you in Dubai, as I understand it. Welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Abu Dhabi, close
Excuse
by.
Me. Thank Abu you. Dhabi, close enough. Welcome. It's good to have you with us, since there's so much going on in the part of the world in which you're both expert and now in place. You've just visited Syria, as I understand it, and I want to talk with you about that. But before we do, one of the other folks that we have relied upon throughout the course of this program, just a remarkable individual, a great intellect, a man who shares your last name, but I understand has no relation to you, other than committed to freedom and understanding the threats to it emanating from the Islamists, the Middle East, and so on, is Dr. Barry Rubin. I wonder if you might say a word about what his loss means at this moment in time.
Well, Barry died at age 64 of lung cancer. But I got to say, when you look at Barry and his opus, if any other scholar lived 300 years, they would not have been able to produce as much, both in quantity and in quality, as Barry did. His energy and drive were amazing, but not only was he amazing in the amount he produced, but he was also right. He was clear. He didn't engage in moral equivalency. He was like a laser on so many different issues, from Iran to Turkey to Syria to Israel and so forth. He really is one to be missed. And if I may, Frank, because so many people just focus on the opus of his work, he had so many other interests, too. And the first time I went to his house in Tel Aviv, and he had a whole setup of 1950s Baltimore setup for his model train set. He was a model train aficionado, and people don't realize that he was as famous in that world as he is in Middle East politics, a completely different Barry.
Isn't that fascinating? I had no idea, but I share your sense of the loss here, and we will try to make up for it as best we can with the insights of those who carry on as you do. Tell us a little bit about your travels in the Middle East, notably to Syria, Michael Rubin, and what you have seen there firsthand that, I'm afraid probably attests to the kind of insights that both you and Barry Rubin have shared with us over the years.
Well, Frank, I'm sure that both you and I and many in the audience agree with our frustrations of Syria. There really is no good side there. You have the Assad regime on one side, which works with Hezbollah, is Iranian-backed, and so forth. And the opposition, which people bend over backwards to describe as moderate, really is radical and an al-Qaeda front at this point. But there's actually a corner of Syria, a corner I went to, which is controlled by the Kurds, Syrian Kurdistan. They call it Rojava now. And what I did is I went there, and it was during the Geneva II conference, to see a new administration set up. They have a new constitution. They selected a transitional government with Kurds, Arabs, Christians. They actually have a functioning society there. I was seeing garbage trucks pick up the trash. But you know what the surprise is, Frank? The surprise is, and it actually probably isn't a surprise, the United States treats that section of Syrian Kurdistan as a pariah rather than as a model. And the reason is because Turkey doesn't want another autonomous Kurdish zone on its borders. Turkey rather have al-Qaeda in that region than The Kurds, and unfortunately Secretary of State John Kerry seems to agree with him.
This is such an important point, Michael, and it really raises a number of questions, but let's just stay with Turkey for a moment. This is a country that is itself now undergoing tremendous internal turmoil, but it essentially seems to be a contest between two Islamist factions, neither of which have our interests at heart. And as you say, particularly the Erdogan regime of the moment is closely aligned with al-Qaeda, is enabling its operations in Syria. How do we continue to treat it, consider it as an ally, let alone a reliable one?
You know, that's a very good question. That's a $64 million question. But like I said, I'm here in Abu Dhabi, and I've been traveling in the Persian Gulf quite a bit. And the real eye-opening factor of the Persian Gulf is that people are talking about Turkey as being the source, as being one of the two main sources of instability and promotion of radical Islam in the region, the other being Qatar. And the fact that you have Saudis and Emiratis and others talking about the danger which Turkey poses by supporting radical Islam, it's a complete reversal of the way we tended to look at Turkey 10 years ago. Unfortunately, we're still in denial about what Turkey has become in so many different levels.
Well, in denial, Michael Rubin, and as you know so well, we are actually enabling it. The president considers Recep Tayyip Erdogan one of his best foreign friends, and we are making accommodations, I think, under his influence all over the place. We'll be talking more about some of these with Diana West as tremendously ill-advised practice, but it nonetheless seems to be going on. Michael, I thought you were going to say one of the two centers of instability in the Middle East was Iran. I guess that constitutes a third, certainly the Shiite strain of it. You followed it as closely as anybody, perhaps other than Barry Rubin, but where are we at the moment, as seen from the Gulf most especially, with respect to this deal with Iran and its future containment?
Well, there's two main trends that are coming from my conversations in the Gulf with senior officials. The first is that this agreement is going forward, that the United States and the West is rushing towards an agreement, sanctions are collapsing, and there's an assumption that because this agreement is being negotiated too quickly, that there's going to be huge loopholes, huge gaps, which the Iranians are going to exploit to make the world a far less safe place. There's just a general assumption in this part of the world that the Iranians do want a military nuclear capability. But then the other factor of this is that people feel that the United States hasn't been a very good friend, that it has blindsided many of its allies with its rush to the Iranian embrace, and therefore leaves many of the countries in the region without any recourse other than to try to cut their own separate deals with Iran. And unfortunately, that seems to be what's going on right now.
One other option, which we've been hearing about, notably from certain Saudis, Michael Rubin, is the idea that they will obtain their own nuclear capabilities. Do you see evidence of that as an alternative, or are they basically now in the mode of trying to reach some sort of separate peace? And either way, Michael, what does this mean for the future, as you put it, stability of the region and American interests there?
Well, the two options aren't mutually exclusive, Frank. On one hand, they're going to try to make their own accommodation, but on the other hand, they are going to develop their own nuclear capability. That's a broad assumption within the region. If President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry think that they're making this region safer by reaching out to Iran, they're sadly mistaken. I've never seen the region such a powder keg as it is now, and it's only going to get worse.
And Michael, lastly, Israel. There is evidence that John Kerry's, headstrong, to say the least, insistent on concessions by the Israelis is making Israel's security situation even more perilous. What's your sense on that?
I think the Israelis are absolutely right to complain on that. The fact of the matter is, every Secretary of State comes in and thinks that it is somehow wise to rush and force concessions on the part of the Israelis, not recognizing that the root problem in the region is the Palestinian rejection of Israel as a Jewish state. That ultimately is something which John Kerry is going to learn the hard way. I find it very silly that National Security Advisor Susan Rice complains at the personal attacks that Israelis have allegedly made against Secretary of State John Kerry, because when you look at the books written by any number of Obama administration officials, the amount of personal vitriol which they express towards Israelis is truly shocking, undiplomatic, and shows that really the moral leadership of the United States has become unhinged.
Well, it has, and unfortunately, it not only speaks ill of us, but as I think you are proving, Michael, with your travels and with your writings, notably with Dancing with the Devil, it makes the place much more dangerous for us as well as our friends in the region. I trust you will keep us apprised. We look forward to the longer visit with you about Dancing with the Devil. Safe travels in the meantime, and thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us, Michael Rubin of the American Enterprise Institute. Next up, we'll be speaking with Diana West. We'll get into what's happening in the way of submission in the interest of furthering this Islamist agenda. Straight ahead.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.